I want to invite you to reach for your handout as we come to this second reading on our Lenten journey. It is a road song, and if you've ever traveled a long distance, you know how music helps the time pass. And you could put together a whole playlist of great road songs to accompany you on a journey. As I thought of road songs this morning, I thought, you know, you could put Back on the Road Again by REO Speedwagon. If you're more of a metalhead, you could put Highway Star on your radio. If you're old school King of the Road, some of you might remember that. If you like your rock with a little country tinge, you could put on Life is a Highway by Sheryl Crow. If you want to relive your Smoking the Bandit days, you can put on Eastbound and Down. That's a fun one. Someone mentioned after first service, Going to the Country, which I've always liked, that real high voice. Going to the country, da, 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 da. You know, that voice. But the best road song that I am aware of is attributed to Willie. It's Willie Nelson's song, On the Road Again. And in many ways, that's what this song is. It is the version of Willie's song for ancient Israel. It is a road song, and it's identified as a road song by the little subscription that you see at the beginning. That's actually in the Hebrew text. If you look before verse 1, in italics, you read a song of ascents. And what this is one of a collection of songs. Usually the Psalms stand on their own, but there's a concept album in the midst of the Psalter. It's Psalm 120 through Psalm 134, and there are 14 songs all labeled a Song of Ascents because they are songs meant to be sung by Jewish pilgrims making their way to temple worship for feast days. These were songs, because you didn't have radio back then, that the pilgrims would sing together as they were approaching the Jerusalem temple. That's why they are all called a song of ascents. You ascend to Jerusalem. You go up a hill. There's an elevation to your journey. And so this is a song, and it's there at the beginning. It's Psalm 121, and so it gives you the start of the journey. Verse 1, this is how we begin all of our journeys. We lift up our eyes to wherever we're going. And here the pilgrims are lifting up their eyes to the hills. They are gazing at the hills. They're looking into the distance. They realize they're beginning a long journey. And they know that eventually over the next hill is going to be Mount Zion, where the temple resides. But all along the way, each hill before that may be hiding some danger. Because travel in the ancient world was always riddled with difficulties and dangers, because over the next hill, you could have some bandits ready to raid you, to take your stuff, to rob you of your goods. Or all along the way, as you're traversing this difficult landscape, you could slip, you could slide, you could fall, you could break something. There's no AAA to call. You are stuck unless you have a helper. There could be the dangers of sunstroke, because water was not immediately available. You couldn't bring your bottled water, and so you could have sunstroke. Or there's dangers from the moon that this psalm talks about that would have to do with the dangers lurking in the darkness. That as you set up camp, who knows what kind of creatures are lurking, looking for a human sandwich. And so you had all of these dangers all along the way, so that any time the people of Israel set out on a journey, there was inherent risk, and they knew that. Now, we have those same risks, we just don't notice it. It was far more likely that you'd die driving in your car on the way here than it would be if you took, for example, a plane, or you did some kind of other event today, if you jumped out of an airplane with a parachute. The chances of your mortality are far less than the higher chance every time you open that car door, strap yourself in, and take the risk of moving ahead in your journey. Now, our risks are sometimes not clear to us, but the risks to the ancient Israelites were very clear. They knew the bandits, the danger, the sunstroke, the risks, all that was involved. And therefore, as this psalmist looks out, verse 1, I lift up my eyes to the hills. They see the path before them, the journey ahead. It's only right that they'd ask the next question. From where will my help come? Who's going to be my partner on this journey? Who's going to travel along with me? Who will help me if dangers arise? And the amazing answer that the people of Israel give as the pilgrims are making their way to the Jerusalem temple is verse 2, my help comes from Yahweh, the covenant-keeping God of Israel, who made heaven and earth, which is a way of saying the transcendent God, because we are creature, God is creator. God is transcendent. God is the one who is beyond and above anything we can think, ask, or imagine. And yet, in some way, the people of Israel looked up and said, that same transcendent God who created all things is as close as my next step. That this God goes before me, is behind me, and walks with me throughout the entire course of this journey. Who will be my help? My help comes from the Lord, who, verse 3, because this is the Creator, after all, who's transcendent, is a very uncommon helper. Verse 3, He won't let your foot be moved. He's not going to fall asleep. Someone will always be on guard. Verse 5, the Lord your keeper and your shade at the right hand. Sunstroke, God will be there. Darkness of the moon at night, God will be there. Verse 7, any kind of unpredicted evils that arise, God will be there. Because God is not only transcendent, infinitely holy, and beyond anything we can comprehend, God is imminently close and walking with great care and love with God's people. And that's why there's a key word that's mentioned 6 times in this, and you probably saw it if you were trying to kind of discern what that word is. And that word is keep. Did you see it again and again? Verse 3, He who keeps you will not slumber. Verse 4, He who keeps Israel. Verse 7, the Lord will keep you from evil, keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out. And of course, right dead smack in the center, the meat of the sandwich. And that's how Israel's poetry was often structured. You had kind of things that led up. They were the bun of the sandwich, and then you had the meat. And the meat in the middle at the exact center is the Lord is your Samar, your keeper. And that word keeper is a beautiful word. It has all kinds of nuances. It not only means to keep, it means to guard, it means to protect, it means to treasure, it means to show attentive care to something or someone or to watch over them diligently. And the psalmist wants us to hear in the chorus of the song, the meat of the sandwich, that the Lord is your keeper. Now, there's a big difference between having something and keeping something, and that's important to note for some people who might be uncomfortable with the word keep. I have a favorite shirt. It's not this one. This one's too uncomfortable. Nasty. I don't like this at all. I do this for you. You pay me simply to dress up. Otherwise, I'd do everything for free. My favorite shirt is comfortable. It's loose. It's a nice, nice t-shirt with some long sleeves because I like the long sleeves. I think they make you look cooler. And so I have a favorite shirt. It's my possession. I have it. But you keep something that is far more valuable to you because you want the best for it. Most of you or some of you have a pet. You don't have a pet. You keep a pet. I mean, you do have a pet, it's a possession, but at the same time you keep it because you are concerned for its welfare. You don't just have it as a possession, you want the best for it. You watch over it, you treasure that pet, you are hoping for its welfare. When your pet hurts, you hurt too because you are keeping it. You are protecting and cherishing it. That's why Robert Fisher writes, God does not merely have us, God keeps us. We are God's beloved and immeasurably dear to God. We're not merely possessions in the eyes of the Lord, because if we suffer, it hurts God too. And so what the psalmist wants us to hear is that God not only has us, but God keeps us, that God treasures us, that God watches over the people of Israel as they're moving toward pilgrimage. And the psalmist shares this with us so that we on our journeys might experience that same keeping. That promise comes to its climax in verse 7. The Lord will keep you from all evil. He will keep your life. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time on and forevermore. So not just for this journey to the temple, not for the next journey that you have, but for all of your journeys. No matter where you are, at home or on vacation, at school or at work, in gym or in the hospital, no matter what arises, whether it's good or evil, no matter whether what happens next is expected or completely unexpected, God keeps. And that keeping is not only from this time on, but it's forevermore. So there's no time, there's no place, there's no circumstances in which God does not watch over and keep and protect and guard. In many ways, this is very similar to what Paul's going to say in Romans 8. Every time I do a funeral, I almost always quote, "For neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor principalities, nor anything present, nor anything to come, nothing can separate us from the love of God which is in Christ Jesus." That's the way to say it under the new covenant. For Israel, they're saying the same thing. Neither death, nor life, nor angels, nothing to come, nothing present, nothing in the future, nothing can separate us from the fact that God keeps and watches over and cherishes God's people. Now that's a good road song to have on your playlist. That's a good road song, particularly if the way ahead is risky and wrought with dangers. And for the psalmist, it's not just that pilgrimage to the temple that is part of his journey. All of life's a journey. That's why Sheryl Crow is exactly right. Life is a highway. That's why we're always on the road again. We're always transitioning from point A to point B. You transitioned here, you're going to transition home or to a restaurant. You may have plans today. You're going to get on the road again to wherever you want to go. You might have some obligations. You have work tomorrow. There are all kinds of things where you're on the road again all the time, every day, from point A to point B. Which is why this song's good to have in the playlist as you lift your eyes, perhaps not to the hills of Jerusalem, but to whatever hills it is that you're headed toward, that you can know something. As you lift your eyes, obviously there's exciting possibilities, but there's also some dangers. And there's one thing you can know for certain on a road that's constantly changing, and that is verse 5, the Lord is your keeper. Now, what's interesting about travel is when you're traveling, everything's changing, especially when you're on a long road trip. You know that. Everything is new. Every vista changes. Every single thing is constantly changing around you. We find that exciting because we're purposely on vacation. When we're not on vacation and everything's constantly changing around us, we're not quite as excited because nobody likes change. We all have our rhythms. We all have our routines. But the reality is, if life is a highway, everything is changing as we move forward. Our children are born, and then before we know it, they're grown, and before we know it, they leave, or a relationship shifts and changes, or our vocation changes, or our body changes as we age, or we hit retirement and everything changes. And in the midst of all those changes, we're surrounded by the also constantly shifting change of disease and injury and accidents and infirmity and recessions and unemployment and debt and theft and all those things. We are on the road and everything's constantly changing. Nothing stays the same, with one exception. There's only one constant, and that's what the psalmist is celebrating. Verse 5, the Lord is your keeper. Verse 8, will keep your going out and coming in from this time forward and forever. That the God of the cosmos, the God who's created all things, is not distant, aloof, or unconcerned, but deeply concerned about every step of the journey that you and I take. For this God is your keeper, your helper. Now, that's true whether you believe it or not. But there's only one way to gain comfort from this truth, and that is to elevate your gaze, to lift up your eyes, to look to the heavens, to look ahead and say, there is someone traveling with me. But we don't tend to look to the skies or look to the heavens or even look to God, generally speaking, because we live in a society, in a culture that's saturated with, and it's deeply saturated, individualism and self-sufficiency. I don't need no helper. Why do I need God to help keep my life? I don't need the crutch of religion. I don't need the crutch of even anyone helping me or any institutional help or anything. I'll make it on my own. The John Waynes of this world, the self-sufficient, the individuals. We live in a world where that's celebrated, where that's seen as like the highest achievement. And so one of the last things that we are tempted to do is to say, I need help. We feel weak. We feel like we're compromised. We feel like we haven't lived up to what we should live up to. But the reality is, no matter how John Wayne-ish you are, eventually something happens. Sickness, or an accident, or job loss, or aging, or some expected turn, and you realize, I can't be my own God. Because if I try to make it on my own, life will eventually remind me that I need a helper. And you'll have no choice at that time other than to acknowledge the limits of your power and lift your eyes to the Lord. That's why I read this often at hospital visits. Psalm 121. If I've ever visited you, there's two psalms I'll turn to. Psalm 23, the Lord is my shepherd. And this one as well, Psalm 121. And there's a reason why I read those to people lying flat on their back, being forced, sometimes for the first time in their life, to lift up their eyes and to realize there's nothing they can do. There's no help that they can self-help themselves with. That they are at the mercy of the help of others. And at that point, I read this psalm with great delight because not only does the psalm point to that, but the thing I love about this psalm is there's not a single direction or command. There's nothing commanded in this psalm. It's not like the psalm says, hey, you need to get your life together and then God's your helper. You need to have your doctrine right, then God's your helper. There's nothing like that. Instead, it is lift up your eyes. Just look, gaze with faith. Because the reality is, no matter where you are, no matter how much you've goofed things up, no matter what you are experiencing, there is a helper that has been there all along the way, whether recognized or unrecognized. But now you're going to have to, if you want any comfort from it at all, recognize it. Now, how much better to know that comfort every step of the journey rather than with the surprise of being flat on your back and trying to wrestle some comfort from it while you're in the midst of deep difficulty? That's why I invite you, congregation, to lift your eyes, to find comfort in this now, and to know that the comfort that is given in this psalm, the Lord is your keeper, doesn't necessarily mean that there aren't dangers. The psalmist is quite aware of dangers. But what it does mean is in the constant recycling of dangers, there's one constant, that God's keeping you. One last quote. This is Eugene Peterson, the translator of the Message. He says, the Christian life is going to God, or it's a journey. In going to God, Christians travel the same ground that everyone else walks on. We breathe the same air, we fear the same dangers, we're subject to the same pressures, and we're buried in the same ground. Basically, our lives look a lot like our unbelieving friends. Yet, the difference is that each step we walk, each breath we breathe, we know we're preserved by God. We know we are accompanied by God. And therefore, no matter what doubts we endure or what accidents we experience, the Lord will keep our life. We may lose our grip on God. God does not lose God's grip on us. And the comfort of this road song is all along the way of our journey. The Lord is your keeper. The Lord will keep your going out and your coming in from this time forward. So as you lift your eyes to the hills, as you look ahead to whatever is your next point B, as you travel here from point A to that point B, what do you see? Some of you see hopeful possibilities. There's a lot of good things on the horizon. Some of you might see looming threats. Some of you see clear roads. Some of you see dangers lurking. It doesn't matter either way. God is holding your life. God is your keeper. God is your protector. That is the only constant, that your traveling partner is the maker of heaven and earth. So no matter what's ahead, no matter what changes come, the one constant you can rely on is that God is holding your life.